yeah. It's time for the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Show on Genesis Communications Network. I am Michael W. Dean, broadcasting from a windowless bunker in, actually from the mobile command bunker, the Wormabago. Today we're in Lusk, Wyoming. Lusk, population, I think it's 4, and where they use logging chains for windsocks. The temperature is 6 degrees Fahrenheit, which is actually kind of balmy. It was down to, let's see, negative 19 last night, I believe. And Mr. Nima Vidati is out on paternity leave. His wife has not brought forth a baby into the world yet, but she's a day overdue of her 27, I don't know how many weeks. How many weeks, DJ? Yeah. What? 40 weeks, yeah. Yesterday was supposed to be a day that will live in infancy, and didn't happen. So they're sitting around relaxing and enjoying late-term pregnancy. So, yeah. Today, filling in, we have Ben Stone, the bad Quaker, in his Wormabago. And we have Kevin McKernan, a preeminent DNA scientist. Let's say hi to everybody. First of all, Ben, where is your Wormabago today, and what is the temperature?
I am at a secluded location in northeastern Alabama at a wonderful little lake here. It just turned 49 degrees.
Wow.
We're having light rain, and it is beautiful here.
I would be running in my shorts outside kissing squirrels if it were that warm here. And Kevin McKernan is in Mordor on the Potomac, also known as Washington, D.C. Kevin, what are you doing in Washington, D.C.? Why are you there?
I am here at the American Epilepsy Society to watch a little pocket of anarchy occur in the medical community, which is, I'll call it entropy because anarchy is a dirty word.
Yeah, what's the temperature there in Mordor on the Potomac?
It's snowing here, so it's probably, I'd say around 30.
How cold does it have to get to close the government, like 0 degrees Kelvin? To really
close
it.
Yeah, I think so. I think you need the heat death of the universe to occur.
So, Kevin is an interesting friend of ours who has done things that we don't normally do. Like, you know, we sit around in the Fiends and talk about how all presidents are stupid and we don't need a system like that. And, my cat has a hairball. But Kevin has been invited to the White House to hang out with presidents. Don't hold it against him. But you met Clinton, right? Or you went to the Clinton White House for some reason.
I was in the same room as him at the West Wing, where the Human Genome Project had been decreed a tie by the president, despite it not really being one. So that was Bill Clinton, and it was back in 2000
happened. Did he try to have sex with you?
If he did, he claims he didn't inhale, I hear lately he has now come back on that lie and claims he did inhale. So it's cooler now that Sanjay Gupta is out saying it's okay to inhale.
Yeah, when he was on MTV speaking to a bunch of young voters and asked if he, you know, they handed someone basically a 3x5 card and said, ask him this question. And they said, did you ever smoke marijuana? And he said, yes, but I didn't inhale, which is such Clintonese, like, lying lawyer talk of, we can please both sides with this answer.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So what's the Human Genome Project, and tell me why that is not the devil's work? Because some people probably think it is.
So understanding the code of life is what the Human Genome Project is about, is understanding all the DNA in your cells, how are they different person to person, and how does that manifest itself in disease or in life longevity? So I would say it's not the devil's work, because if you look at the message in DNA, it is basically moving ideas frictionlessly through time, very good ideas. And the vast majority of DNA transmission in the world is done symbiotically, sexually, or non-parasitically, which is somewhat different than you might imagine our social and political structures to be.
Huh. Do you deal with governments a lot?
You have to, unfortunately, in this field. There is a lot of government funding. There's $30 billion a year funded through the NIH, which keeps many scientists somewhat captive under that sort of research system. And there's a litany of literature that you can read about whether that is pointed in the right direction or not. I would argue in many cases, since there isn't a market pricing mechanism for that research, it can go into a variety of bunny holes that may not necessarily be productive for the marketplace.
So a lot of people say that people who are DNA scientists are in some way or another playing God. I mean, you're basically concerned with solving disease, right? You're not trying to make monkeys hyper-intelligent and put them in Congress, right?
There already are monkeys in Congress, so we can't fix that. But that's a different matter. No, we're not trying to do genetic modification. Some folks do genetic modification. We are looking to understand, in this case, the reason I'm down here is we're looking at kids that have epilepsy, and we're trying to understand which genes they have and how they're broken so that we can properly drug them. There's probably 26 different anti-epileptic drugs in the marketplace, and right now it is a random walk through that pharmacopoeia to figure out what would help a given kid. It's kind of an ugly battle. These kids have 100 to 300 seizures a week sometimes. Each seizure is, if they're at that frequent level, they can cause SUDEP, which is sudden unexplained death from epilepsy. So these people who live this life of epilepsy are waiting for lightning to strike. They never know which one's going to hit the brainstem and it's going to sort of end their life. And so you will never meet a more dedicated group of people who understand carpe diem. They're out for a hunt to fix this, and it's getting better. The DNA sequencing is certainly helping.
So you have to deal with a lot of government regulation. What is your opinion overall on the scientists who are in charge with the government regulation and the government regulation itself?
You probably won't hear this say about many government regulators, but the ones actually in the FDA are very well educated and they're brilliant. They're doctors, they're PhDs, they have the best of intentions. They did not go to medical school to learn how to design bombs. They went to medical school to try and fix children and patients. Nevertheless, the architecture of the FDA is a little bit different. That's a separate entity, and I don't try to ever judge my colleagues that are in the FDA with the architecture that they're under. They can't control that. The architecture of the FDA, unfortunately, doesn't have a lot of competition. And so it's very hard to judge whether the FDA has any efficacy. There's no one to measure it against.
Well, that seems to be, in the Fiend opinion, in the opinion that we commonly put forth on this show, that we put forth as fact, and I believe it is fact, that seems to be basically what's wrong with the world. I mean, people say, it's Obama, it's the unions, it's this and that. And really, I just look at those as tiny cogs in a giant machine. And people say things like, well, who would build the roads without the government? You know, the answer is road builders. And private businesses would have an incentive to build a road to them. And people say, well, without the government, people could charge $1 million per mile toll. And the answer is, but they wouldn't, because they'd want people to come to their business or their town. How does that work with, let's not even limit it to the FDA, but to regulations in the medical industry? Instead of Obamacare, what would you like to see with the medical industry as far as government involvement?
I honestly think if you ripped all of government out, it would be better. And the reason – there's certainly fear that when you do that, there'll be snake oil salesmen, and that's always the kickback and the reply you get from people when you say, actually, all of this government hasn't improved things. It's only made the cost go up. Yes, there are going to be snake oil salesmen if you remove it all, but – actually, I don't think the government's doing a very good job removing that as it stands today. The regulations we have in place now, the heavily regulated drugs are more toxic than the ones you can buy in the States. That's not very well known, that if you look at cocaine and heroin, all these street drugs, despite the fact that there's not a lot of QC and quality control on those drugs, very few people are dying from those. They're dying from the regulatory drugs. Now, it's not a very fair statement. There's probably thousands of regulatory drugs that are out there for very specific diseases, and so there's many more drugs they're having to measure. But the mere fact that there's a bottleneck on how we measure these drugs is part of the problem. So that, you know, the physicians will always have this Hippocratic oath that will say, first do no harm. And first do no harm is a double-edged sword when it comes to diseases like epilepsy, because if you do not do anything, there will be harm. These children's seizures eventually give them neuroinflammation. They generate reactive oxygen species in the brain. So their brains are slowly getting electrocuted over time. And you can't do nothing. You have to do something. And so waiting for a drug to get through the FDA, which could take 10 years, none of these patients have that kind of time. So there has to be and there are, what we're seeing right now, this entropy that I spoke about earlier, this kind of anarchy that's occurring in this field, is that patients are taking these matters into their own hands. They're sequencing their own genomes, figuring out what's wrong, and applying the right drug. And this is particularly important and overlaps with a lot of what you guys speak about, which is this medical cannabis field. There's now what's known as the cannabis caravan, which is groups of families moving to Colorado to get access to a drug from the plant that doesn't get you high. It's CBD. It's called cannabidiol. This compound in the plant doesn't get you high, but it is melting away these seizures in these kids that are having Dravet syndrome. And the response rates are actually quite remarkable. They're in the 60 to 80% rate so far. And that's unheard of in this field. But you can't get it in any other states. So people are having to make the decision to pick up their families and move just so they can get access to this. And it's great to see because it's competition and people are looking and they're becoming more individualistic about how to govern this healthcare crisis.
Yeah, the thing that basically turned me libertarian, I mean, I haven't even had a drink, let alone a drug, for 19 and a half years. And the thing that turned me libertarian pretty much was in 2006, my only child, Amelia, died of cancer. And while she was dying of cancer, she was 24 years old, while she was dying of cancer, a doctor told her to break the law and smoke pot to deal with the chemo and deal with the pain of the cancer. And she did. And the thought to me that someone could throw her in a cage for the only thing that was giving her relief while she was dying an excruciating death, just it made me mad, just bug-eyed, just like, that is so insane, you know? And I kind of looked at marijuana laws, and I became one of the few outspoken marijuana pro-legalization across the board of marijuana advocates in the country who literally hates the stuff personally. Like, I don't like smoking it. I haven't smoked it. You know, I was pretty much a drinker, but I heard a friend say, I wasn't trying out for AA when I was out there drinking. So yeah, I did a little bit of drugs too, but,
Are you saying you didn't inhale, Michael?
No, I inhaled, but I never liked it, but I'm very in favor of it. And we'll be being legal. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends with DNA scientist Kevin McKernan after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends, not your grandpa's talk radio.
This is Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends. Using government-printed funny money fuels and encourages wars abroad, and the wars at home against you and all you hold dear. Why should you remain beholden to self-appointed federal kings who don't care if you starve in a cage? Become your own king today by owning gold and silver from Midas Resources. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Midas Resources banner over on the right, or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends.
Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, this is some Squisscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends talk radio show on Genesis Communications Network, and we would like to welcome a new affiliate today. It is KINX FM in Great Falls, Montana, playing us Sunday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. This station is 97,000 watts of tyranny-busting power. It's in Great Falls or Fairfield, Montana, which is the malt barley capital of the world. And you like malt barley, don't you there, Ben?
I do. They make wonderful things out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're talking to Kevin McKernan, DNA scientist, who's hung out with Bill Clinton. Did you inhale when you were with Bill Clinton?
No, I did not inhale when I was with Bill Clinton. There was too many smoke detectors inside the White House to even bring a match in there.
So we have a short segment here, and then we'll come back for some more long segments and more hours and hours and hours of Kevin McKernan. Tell us real quick what your journey to liberty was.
Well, it really started in when I left Life Technologies. I was building these DNA sequencers that people were using for cancer. They want to sequence tumors in patients and then compare the mutations in the tumor, next mutations in their own genome. And that sometimes gives you a few druggable, hopeful targets. When I went through that, I had a few friends ask me about medical marijuana, its use in cancer, and I started reading into it. And that inspired me to go and sequence the plant's genome. So I left LifeTech.
You were the first person to sequence the marijuana genome, right?
Yes. Yeah, I was. And it was kind of a leap of faith because I had been on my job for 6 years, and it was getting to the point where it just felt a little redundant. And I had a non-compete for a year with the company. So it's a huge company that's in every field. And a non-compete basically means go to the beach. And I'm not very good at that. So I decided to go off and sequence the cannabis genome and put it public on the cloud for everyone to use. And in the course of doing that, the regulations were so thick and confusing that I decided to design a DNA purification system in my garage that I could fit into a piece of luggage that I could get through the TSA to Holland, purify the DNA in a hotel room, and get it back to the States. And that, to me, just showcased how all crazy this regulation is, and it doesn't really make anyone any safer. That made me really evaluate what does this stuff do? Why is it coercive? How come there isn't competition? Do we really need it? I mean, there are all these cases of private regulation with UL, and you can even look at the colleges now are all compared through U.S. News and World Report. I mean, there's private forms of regulation that have competition that I think are far healthier than edicts that are one size fits all that eventually affect people like your daughter. So this concept of one size fits all. Central planning, we have to really reevaluate as a society because it's the most inefficient way to use energy. Nothing is one size fits all. We're all different. And that became really clear to me throughout that project. But it was an awakening. And it's really hard to accept because you spend your whole life in the sciences believing in all that regulation. It's being forced upon you and you're being told that you need this, otherwise snake oil people will dominate the world. The reality is, once you put these regulations in where there is no accountability to the customer themselves, like i.e. the taxpayer can't control the FDA regulations, you actually end up with the reverse. You end up with more danger, despite everything being paved in good intentions. So it's been an interesting journey, but that, of course, led me into watching your movie, Guns and Weed, which was related to the freedom of the cannabis genome. Reading a lot about Herbert Spencer from Ben Quaker over there. Herbert Spencer is a very interesting character in this field because he actually coined the term survival of the fittest. Most people don't know that. They think it was Darwin. And Herbert Spencer was a little bit more of a Lamarckian, meaning that he believed in DNA traits could be passed on, acquired traits could be passed down to their children, which has been a no-no in most of the DNA sciences up until very recently. So even this guy from 1820 is now showing to have been right about even acquired traits being heritable. So his work was also very very inspiring about learning different perspectives on evolution. So it's been a long journey, but it's been eye opening. Wouldn't want to have it any other way.
Yeah, wasn't there some Ron Paul in there and some Freedom Fiends
there
at
was.
Some point?
Oh yeah, there was. I skipped over all that. Sorry about that. But yes, Ron Paul. I had a big Ron Paul phase, and it was really, I think, the Freedom Fiends that really pointed out some of the hypocrisy in some of his beliefs. I mean, he's still kind of a believer in IP, and still believe he wants some
intellectual property, meaning copyright, trademark, patent.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I don't know that that's actually congruent with where we need to go as a species. As a species, we're going to evolve past these inefficient mechanisms because technology is just going to make it happen. I mean, this idea of voting every 4 years is somewhat silly when you can do SurveyMonkey and FlashTrade at microsecond scales on the internet.
Yep, and we'll have more when we come back from Norkage with Kevin McKernan, DNA scientist, and Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Show.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Want to contribute to liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Yeah. Freedom Fiends. Broadcasting to you live from the Wormabago, the Mobile Command recording and broadcast studio. And today we are in Lusk, Wyoming. Lusk has a population of 1,567. It is the town seat of Neo Brara County, and it's founded in 1886 by Frank S. Lusk, renowned Wyoming rancher. You know, the thing a lot of people don't know about Wyoming, and this is why we're very resistant to gun regulations by people who live in Los Angeles and New York who want to tell us what to do here. The last mass shooting in Wyoming was in the late 1800s, and it was over sheep. So we have another Mobile Command recording broadcast studio out there. We have Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, who's out solving mysteries in a van with his wife. And you're in Alabama today, Ben. You had a little shout-out to do to a family member. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I do. Exactly 1 year ago today, at about 3 o'clock this morning, 1 year ago, my grandson was born. And so he's a year old today, which is kind of cool because if Nima's baby is born today, that could be really pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that could. So speaking of think of the children, a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm in favor of less government maybe, but with no government regulation, we'd all die of lead poisoning and snake oil medicines that didn't work. What do you think of that, Ben? And why is that not true in your mind, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker?
Well, a lot of our perceptions are based on things like Hollywood and, you know, perverted school texts that are entirely wrong. If you go back into the 1800s before all these regulations existed, there were all kinds of hokery going on in medicine. But time and the market separates those things out. And if you can pick out any particular one type of hokery that was in medicine in the 1800s, it probably didn't last very long because in addition to there not being regulations, there was also the freedom for people to react on a one-to-one basis if somebody was, you know, electrocuting your child or whatever to try to cure them from something. There was a built-in mechanism into the market that keeps us from doing things like eating lead and shoving rocks in our eyes and so forth. Kevin, how do you see this in your field? How do you imagine these things happening if there was no regulations?
I do think there'd be some market regulation there. And I also think as a scientist, we always have to look at the seen and the unseen. In other words, what's the control experiment here? If you ask how safe has government kept us and all these regulations kept us, well, I'd actually make a strong argument that the most dangerous virus the human genome has ever seen, it isn't Ebola, it isn't smallpox or TB. In fact, it's not a Y2K virus, but arguably it's human written. It's our belief that we need these regulations. It translates into, you know, hundreds of millions of people dying over a century.
So government is a virus, basically, you're saying. Government behaves like a virus.
It is. It's a meme that's traveling through time, just like DNA, but I can't say that it's a symbiotic one. It's one that actually asks for, in order to protect you from the dangers of a monopoly, we're going to create one and put it in place to regulate.
You know, there's a thing that we touch on The Fiends a lot that really can turn people off when they hear it. And it's the idea that the Constitution, you know, while the Bill of Rights seemed like a good idea, you know, it's the Lysander Spooner idea, this guy from the late 1800s who was very forward thinking, who basically was sued by the United States government when he started a post office to compete, a private post office that did a better job than the federal post office, delivered letters better and for less money. And the government put him out of business. They passed a law saying you can't compete with us. And he basically said that he said in the 1800s, you know, when the tyranny level was much lower overall, he said that the Constitution has either been set up to cause this tyranny or has been powerless to prevent it. And a lot of our listeners very much believe and say things like, we need to get back to the Constitution. We need to get great men into office to enforce the Constitution. And the thing is, if you actually read the whole Constitution, it does set up those things. You know, the first page of the United States Constitution gives the power to tax, and it gives the power to do pretty much whatever they want for the public good. And I think that people who say we need to get back to the Constitution, this is not something they're going to want to hear, but I don't see it as that much different than backing Obama, because you're basically saying we need to pick great men to rule us and tell us what to do. And the problem with voting is, the idea of voting is the average person, it's assuming that the average person is too stupid to take care of themselves, but then why aren't they too stupid to vote for the correct ruler to tell them what to do? The whole system seems like a virus to me, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not anti-American. I'm not saying I don't love the things that define being an American to a lot of people. I'm pro-gun. I'm pro-private property. I'm against taxation. I want to be left alone. I want freedom of religion. I want people to be able to raise their kids the way they want. But I don't think the Constitution is going to make that happen. And in fact, I believe that all government and all coercive force by law against things that don't have a victim, I believe that that is a virus. What do you guys think of that?
Boy,
I would definitely say that it's at least a virus of the mind, in the sense that it's self-replicating and it's destructive to its host. What do you think, Kevin?
I think there's good reference out there to R.J. Rummel's work. He tries to measure up how many people have been killed by their own government, and the number is pretty close to the number of people that have been killed by smallpox. Now, that doesn't include government-to-government warfare, which those numbers then exceed smallpox. And smallpox was eventually eradicated with good ideas, but it was kept alive by government.
You know, a thing that allowed snake oil salesmen also to flourish, which wouldn't happen now, is there was no communication quickly between the average person to the other average person on the other side of the country. There was no internet.
That's true, yes.
There was no Angie's List. People could pull up in a covered wagon, sell everybody a bunch of poison at worst, or something that didn't work at best, and then leave and not come back to that town ever, or maybe not for 4 years until they've forgotten and the guy comes back with a different name or a different product or something or an explanation, you know?
I watched this amazing story yesterday at this Epilepsy Society of a mother whose child had epilepsy, and she went back to school to get an English degree so that she could then go get a doctorate, a PhD in neuropharmacology. Many, many years later, only to then sequence her daughter's genome, figure out that she had calcium channel mutations and that she was on the wrong drug, redrugged her child, and 95% of the seizure frequencies melted away.
That's amazing. That's
called vested interest in the individual. You're not going to have an agency care about your vested interests as much as you. There's no one who cares more about your health.
Yeah, and I'm sure she'd taken her daughter to doctors who care about children, but they just hadn't cared enough about that individual child to have the time or money to do that for that child.
Yes, yes. And to be fair, the drug that she eventually picked was in fact an FDA-approved drug, but she used it off-label. She used it in a different way. So there's you have to ask yourselves you have to assume that if the FDA didn't exist, that no market system would actually help protect this. And I don't see the evidence for that. I would see that you see in all these other markets that the internet and communication allows there to be peer review that isn't coercive, that is in fact competitive.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
Yeah. I think that all technologies can be used for good or evil. And they're generally used for evil with the government. Like, we make jokes all the time about drones being horrible, and they are horrible. We make jokes because it's so horrible. We have liners that say things like, "We'll be right back after this drone passes for the Freedom Fiends," you know, and it's us dealing with something horrific. But the idea of unmanned aerial surveillance, an unmanned programmable small aircraft is not inherently evil. And Amazon is looking into doing package delivery with it. I trust Amazon with drones a lot more than I trust any government in the world with drones.
Because they want you to order a second time. And the whole dichotomy here that's very interesting is why do they only listen to your vote every 4 years if they can read your every email?
Yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah. I mean, Amazon listens to you vote with your wallet every time you order something. And Amazon, they have this whole thing down. They have like NSA level analysis of ordering and traffic and what you search, and they use it for good. They give you recommendations. And if you stop ordering from Amazon, Amazon is going to look at the fact that this individual person stopped ordering from them and wonder why and try to figure it out and fix it. You know, the government is reading emails from everybody and realizing most people are getting more and more hateful and spiteful and not believing in the federal government and everything it's doing. And they're still doing it. They're trying to ramp it up. And there's actually a problem in the NSA. There's an article today in the Washington Post, NSA morale down after Edward Snowden revelations. This new thing by or was published yesterday by Ellen Nakasamia. And basically, like, in it, it has an NSA insider who doesn't want to be named saying that there's a morale problem there, and a big morale problem with it is that Obama won't come 30 miles up the street and visit the NSA personally, and that he won't pass legislation to legalize everything illegal that they're doing. They're really sad about this. They're probably going to get post-traumatic stress, they're probably going to take leave and sue like that cop who pepper sprayed all those kids at that campus in California, and then he sued for mental anguish and won. Like, he got medical, he got disability because he was so sad because he'd become a meme where people were, showing images of him pepper spraying everything in the world, and it made him sad. So yeah, the NSA is sad.
Well, I did see a very interesting email trailer from an epilepsy doctor. Actually, I won't mention his name, but the trailer of his email was, if you're an NSA surveillance person reading this email, know that you have now intersected patient, child patient information, and that you should then consider Edward Snowden's actions and become a whistleblower.
Wow. Yeah, and that's a doctor.
It's a doctor. You're seeing this, the whole world is this will backfire, but the great thing is technology is going to lead the way. People are just going to encrypt, move around this. It's like clutching onto water. It just squeezes right through your hands. That's what innovation does. And the tighter you hold that grip, the faster the stuff moves around it. So I'm hopeful that with the internet and with these new currencies, there has never been an easier time for you to bounce around these imaginary lines where all this regulation sits.
Yeah, and we're going to get to Bitcoin in the second hour, but we're not going to have a whole hour about it. We're not going to have all Bitcoin all the time like we've been having lately. We'll be back with more after this trip to the genuine free market. We'll have more on the Freedom Fiends with DNA scientist Kevin McKernan and Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Show.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Federal Reserve notes only have value because of a collective hallucination, whereas gold and silver are real, and so is their value. Gold and silver predate government-printed funny money, and they will undoubtedly outlive government-printed funny money. Get some gold and silver into your hands from Midas Resources by going to freedomfiends.com right now and clicking on the Midas Resources banner over on the right. Or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, fights to protect your rights in the digital world. When a patent troll threatened podcasters, they fought back. EFF has also defended your right to encryption and has sued the NSA to end the government's mass, suspicionless surveillance. There are different ways you can help EFF, from donations, to signing petitions, to writing your representatives, to just spreading the word. Find out more at EFF.org. That's EFF.org.
All right. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Hour, 2-hour show here on Genesis Communications Network. And today, filling in for Mr. Nima Vedati, who's about to be a daddy, we have Kevin McKernan, the DNA scientist extraordinaire, liberty freedom fighter of the mind. And we have another freedom fighter of the mind, Ben Stone, the bad Quaker. So we're talking the last bit, we're talking in the break about how square governments are. And while Kevin does comply with all regulations and demands of the government, he had to do something extremely square recently, which was he had to go out and buy a typewriter. Now, why'd you have to buy a typewriter, Kevin?
Well, as you know, the insurance industry is very they also have to follow all of these regulations. And so some of the insurance documents that we have to fill out. So we sequence patients with mitochondrial disease and epilepsy in our company, and we have to follow all the CLIA and CAP certification regulations as squarely as we must, because it's a Darwin
squarely.
Award if you don't.
I like that. Squarely is yeah. double
and, meaning. And one of those square suggestions was that their forms had to be filled out with a typewriter, which I don't know if you've looked on Amazon or eBay, but those guys don't really hold typewriters anymore.
Yeah, I remember when in about 1996, when computers really started becoming popular because the internet was kind of taking off. I'd always wanted to own a typewriter, and I went to a Salvation Army in San Francisco, and I bought one of those IBM Selectrics, like with the ball that you can put in different fonts, a really nice, expensive electric typewriter. I bought it for $10, and I had it for a few years and didn't really use it much. I had it as a conversation piece, but I got rid of it and then I moved. And later I wanted to have a typewriter because they were kind of fun. And I went to a Salvation Army and there weren't any. For a while they were so cheap they were almost giving them away, but then people bought them up and they stopped making them. So, yeah, how'd you get a typewriter?
I don't know. Someone else in our office figured it out, but it's sitting like 30 feet from a next generation sequencer that can rattle out about a billion bases of sequence per hour. So it's one of these like ironies that just blows my mind that there's one person there typing, clicking away, and I don't know how many words per minute, and then there's a sequencer that's is what they're typing about.
How much is each piece of equipment worth?
They're about $125,000 a piece for the sequencers.
For a typewriter? And we have, no, I'm kidding.
No, the typewriter is probably just as expensive these days because they're now antiques.
Yeah,
but the hilarity and irony just never leaves.
Well, I heard that the Kremlin is actually using manual electric typewriters now because for security purposes, because it's more secure to use than using any kind of internet or intranet. It's more secure to type something on paper and walk it down the hall. Although then there's the problem of, like, if there's a microphone in the room, it's not secure because they can tell by the patterns you're typing. And you suggested, well, maybe not if they have one finger typists. And I'm thinking, like, I wonder if the Kremlin is training one fingered slow typists now for that purpose.
I'm pretty certain that's the only way that congressmen can type, actually. Yeah. And they'll be upset because there won't be Angry Birds in the typewriter.
Well, you know, on The Simpsons, Mr. Smithers once described his job description as light typing and lying to Congress. And I was thinking, like, yeah, that's not really, but that might be a job description for someone in Congress, because pretty much every job in the world now involves some typing. Back in the day, it was like, oh, I have a girl for that. We have the typing pool. But, you know, it's, I wonder if there's anybody who is in any kind of executive position or executive department position who doesn't do any typing. Maybe there are, but they're probably really old and sexist. They think a girl should do that.
Or they could be dragging software. You know, there's a lot of folks who are now just the software is getting good enough that you can.
It's
just
getting really
off your
good,
voice.
Man. It's getting. I tried the IBM one in like 1996, and it was like Jabberwocky. I mean, I said something that made sense, and what came back to me did not, even after training it. And I tried the Dragon stuff recently on a fast computer, the new version of it, and I dictated an article for Talkers Magazine, and I had to go in and make like three or four corrections, you know, 400 word, but I did the little training thing, but I hadn't like corrected the training with time, which makes it even better. But literally, like, I did a 400 word article, and it was pretty much dead on. So we're going to have more in the second hour with Kevin McKernan, DNA scientist extraordinaire and freedom fighter of the mind, and Ben Stone, the bad Quaker, freedom fighter of the mind. And in the last half hour, we may take some phone calls. So if you've been listening live on the Freedom Fiends and want to talk and ask these people, are you doing the devil's work? They'll explain why they're not and why it's the government doing the devil's work here on the Freedom Fiends. We'll be back after this trip to the free market, the unencumbered free market on the Freedom Fiends.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza here on Genesis Communications Network and smart radio stations in your area. Today, filling in for my co-host, Mr. Nima Vedati, who's out caring for a 9-month and 1-day pregnant wife. We have mystery in this corner. We have Mr. Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, available at badquaker.com. That's BADQUAKER.com. How you doing there, Ben?
Hey, Michael. It's good to be on the radio with you.
Yep. And in the other corner, we have Kevin McKernan, DNA scientist extraordinaire. And Kevin, is there a place people can, do you want to send people to some site or not?
Yeah. So We are not a direct-to-consumer sequencing facility because of many of those regulations we're mentioning. We are direct-to-physicians, so physicians have to order a test. But oftentimes, patients enjoy going to the website to see what's going on. So we, as I mentioned, it's Cortigen Life Sciences. We sequence DNA of people with epilepsy and with mitochondrial disease, and eventually we'll be moving into developmental delay and autism as well. But I think you can just Google Cortigen.com and
how
you'll
do you spell
see
it?
Our
– spell it, please.
It's like Agincourt, but flipped, which
what?
Is Cortigen.
I don't know what that is. Spell it out. Spell it out.
Battle of Agincourt. C-O-U-R-T-A-G-E-N.
All right. Yeah, and I had a completely unrelated I have a recommendation for a TV show, because on the Freedom Fiends, Neem and I often fight or disagree about shows we like, because I like really good TV drama that's well written, well produced, well directed, well shot, well edited, well scored, all of those things. And unfortunately, that often means watching shows like The Shield, where like the heroes are cops, you know, and we don't really like the state and its aggression. So I have to do suspension of statism to enjoy a lot of good stuff. And Nima can't watch it. Nima has to go watch like Hunger Games, like something where, you know, the heroes are plucky young ladies running around with bows and arrows. And I actually found a show called Damages on Netflix. It was on TV, but there's 5 seasons of it, which is also important to me. Like when I get into something, I want to watch, you know, every episode ever made in like one weekend. So go check out Damages on Netflix. You can watch it streaming, and it's got Glenn Close, who's always a really good actor. So she's great. So anyway, we were talking about the NSA and how horrible it is. And I was going to mention my, I have a sig line that I put in sometimes. I was in this rock musical group, as my dad likes to call it, from 1986 to 1993 called Bomb. And Bomb did 4 records, toured the world, you know, played in everything from bars to, you know, big theaters, and had a following and put out records, you know, mostly on independent labels, one on Warner Brothers. And so this band Bomb broke up, but there's still a lot of people out there discovering Bomb, the band, because of the internet. And strangers write me, you know, every couple of weeks I get a new email from a stranger saying, just discovered your band Bomb, found you on the internet, loved your band, wanted to tell you I loved it, you know, whatever. And I write them back, and I have a cut and paste that I put in at the bottom in all capital letters that says, note to NSA and DHS spooks reading my email. This email contains the word bomb, but we're not talking about bombs. Bomb was a now defunct rock musical group from San Francisco. Look it up, creeps. And then I link, you know, link the band's website. So what kind of working, Kevin, within the extremely complicated regulations of the medical and services industry, to the point where you had to go out and buy a typewriter recently to put next to your $125,000 DNA sequencing machine. You had to have like the newest, you have the newest technology in the world, and that's what you do your work on. And then you have this blast from the past sitting next to it on the same table because the government says you have to have a typewriter to fill out these certain forms. What kind of things do you do with moving around in the world now to avoid, to get the best deal of government lack of tyranny?
Yeah, so that's it's a great point. And that whole typewriter thing is what Bastiat would write about as being the unseen consequences of us wanting, you know, this fear to be placated with regulation.
Do you think that the typewriter industrial complex has lobbyists keeping those laws in there?
No, I don't think so. I think sometimes it's just large government largesse, and you know, the Occam razors on this is usually just plain stupidity. You know, I don't think there's a conspiracy of typewriter people lobbying for this, but they're what we have been doing, not so much for the FDA. The FDA really hasn't influenced us that much. It has influenced some of these children with epilepsy because of the, you know, the drug selections they can or can't get. But our field, being direct to physician, we only we don't practice medicine. We sell products to physicians, and so we would go direct to consumer if the FDA were more tolerant of that. But they've clearly shown that they're not. So we're going to you cannot read your own genome now. The FDA has kind of made that clear that you're not smart enough to do that, and you had to have a physician in the picture. But really, what has made us go more international is the intellectual property landscape. Is that there are 4,000 patents on the human genome. So if we sequence one of these sick children, we're actually violating more than that. That's 4,000 genes, which are estimated to be patented. There's 20,000 genes in your genome. So this has made us spend about a year inventing a method to potentially navigate all of these gene patents. And we couldn't be guaranteed that we got around them all, because it's 161,000 claims we'd have to read and analyze, and that would cost us millions of dollars in attorney's fees. So we published it to see if anyone could poke holes in it, the method, that is, that gets around these things, and then started setting up a shop in either Iceland or Bermuda. And the interesting experience there is that both Iceland and Bermuda began negotiating with us like a business, saying, hey, we can offer you less rent or less taxes or no VAT taxes, or, you know, and it suddenly changed my opinion on on how government can evolve to be more efficient and perhaps not even be a government, but be more of a service entity that is voluntary. And I hope that's the way it goes, because the concept of the whole thing crashing down and rebuilding, it sounds so ugly. I would never vote for that, or I shouldn't even say the word vote. I would never advocate for that. But I think with the movement, the free movement of information, some of these lines they draw on a map are starting to dissolve, with currency being able to move and us being able to place ourselves in different districts. So we are now incorporated in Bermuda.
Yeah, let me interject something really quick there. I think that a lot of people who are incredibly frustrated with governments the way that we are looking to the wrong solutions. They're looking to a rifleman solution. And there's a lot of people stroking their bayonets. I call them bayonet strokers, who believe that a civil war is inevitable, or a war with the government, or a second American Revolution, or a second civil war. You have to look at and I'm a gun owner. I polish my bayonets. I have weapons with bayonets and I polish them, but I'm not polishing them while watching Fox News. I'm not polishing them while listening to Obama speeches and cursing out loud in my living room. I really believe that entropy will just destroy these systems on their own, to where they will become less and less and less and less useful, and people will just work around them. And, occasionally governments will crack down horribly on some person for doing something nonviolent to try to get around them, but they can't get around all of them. They are a dinosaur thrashing in the tar pits. I've been saying that for 10 years. I think Reason magazine recently picked up on that, uncredited, and said that, and I'm fine with that. I want the memes out there. But I really think the answer is more like, 7 billion people with smartphones rather than, 1%, 3% of the people with rifles. I really do.
Yeah, that's history shows that that's the wrong approach, is to use violence to fix coercion.
Yeah, and every civil wars are horrible. I mean, people's grandmothers get murdered and their heads get cut off and held up in the street, and nobody wants that. And every civil war ever leads to, the radicals who win the civil war immediately becoming the conservatives who want to lock the system in and become the new tyrants every time.
Yeah, so the wonderful thing about Bermuda, for all those who are thinking about setting up businesses, is that no one files patents there. Very few. I shouldn't say none, but there's very few. And for a lot of information content, like when you sequence someone's genome, you can use methods in Bermuda that may have been patented in the United States, but since you're not in the United States, you can use those methods in Bermuda. And the resulting information from that, you can port into the United States under Bayer versus Halsey, which is a court case that challenged this. And one in prevailing that you can, in fact, move this information derived from patented methods into the States. So that's the main reason we're there, is that that's an ironclad way that has precedence, that we know we can't we if we sequence any person's or any patient's genome, we can't get sued by being housed there. And we also run those methods that we publish while we're there, just to put icing on the cake. But that's a very business-friendly island, and it's about 60,000 people there, and they have been very cooperative in attracting businesses down there. So
they
won.
They won over Iceland.
Over Iceland, yes, yeah. Iceland had was very interesting. The International Monetary Fund actually got involved in that, because Iceland's currency is locked right now. Investors on the island cannot invest in a foreign entity right now. And we had to get the IMF involved to lift that, and they did, but it was it was a little bit more work. And Iceland actually has a probably stronger university base with more PhDs in our field, so it was very, very attractive.
Is English the first language there, like it is in Bermuda?
No, it's not. It's not, and that's one of the reasons why patents aren't often filed there. Is there's a translation fee, so people don't pay that translation fee for a $250,000 person.
So, have you in Bermuda? Your company has 50 employees, right? Have you moved 50 Americans from Bermuda?
No, we have not. In fact, we're probably going to have a very small footprint down there, just a little tiny production facility that only needs maybe 5 people, and the rest will remain up here in Massachusetts.
How big is your company? Can you move it in a briefcase or in a shipping container, the physical entity you have to move to the country you're in?
The physical entity can probably fit in size of a big hotel room that does the sequencing. Sequencing has a very small footprint. The regulatory side that requires the typewriters, well, that's a whole different story. That's probably 90% of the cost of what we do, honestly, is working with the structure that is in the medical care system.
What kind of cases do you use to move the equipment? What company makes the cases?
Well, the equipment has lasers and it's fairly sensitive optical equipment with submicron resolution. So that stuff goes in crates, and the land that we're looking at there is really right next to the airport. So there's not a whole lot of moving around. Once we get equipment in there, the lab's not too far from that strip.
Look at the company Anvil. Anvil makes stuff for musical equipment, and that's what we used to shuck our stuff around the world in. It works great, and it's easy to lift. And I'm not doing they're not one of our sponsors. They should be, but Anvil, I always talk about how when I was in my band Bomb, we had equipment crates, hard shell crates with handles on them, with the word Bomb stenciled on them. And every once in a while, we didn't take them through airports, but the cops would pull us over and be like, "What's in the big red case marked Bomb?" And we'd be biting our tongues not to say, "Well, officer, we forget where we put it, so we marked it."
I'm an anarchist. Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, I don't recommend saying that or being in a band called Bomb for a number of reasons. It'll drive you mad. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Do you want to raise your children outside of the government indoctrination camps that are today's public schools? Check out the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right of freedomfiends.com. The Ron Paul Curriculum is a liberty-based K-12 homeschool course. It covers history, liberty, geography, math, science, and free market economics. Kindergarten through fifth grade are free. Then it's only $250 per family per year. Click on the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom Fiends. Radio for your fiend. Radio for people in a mobile windowless bunker. So, yeah, we're talking here with Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, who is, he's stateless. He's not living in a particular state. He doesn't have a home anymore. He has a mobile home. And he's rented out his house, and he's moving around the country, solving mysteries with his wife in a van. And on the other, in the other corner, we have Kevin McKernan, DNA scientist. And, I do want to give a little shout out for Bitcoin, and then we're never going to talk about it again today, because people have been complaining that we're all Bitcoin all the time. And it's kind of a balancing act with radio of, do you cover the emerging technology that's going to run the world in 5 years at the danger of turning people off who are like, wait, I don't know what the internet is. So we do want to say you can go to a website we've started called wormcoin.com. That's W-O-R-M, like the thing that squiggles on the ground and aerates your soil. And coin, the thing like the thing in your pocket that's worthless, that's printed by the government. Go to wormcoin.com and you can download the source code to make your own cryptocurrency and directions on how to do it that any smart computer person should be able to do. And we think that I actually tried to call into Free Talk Live last night, but they're so busy that it was like, you know, I waited an hour and didn't get on. And that's a good thing that Freedom is so popular that their phone lines are just jammed. But I was basically going to put out the premise that that cryptocurrencies will only become what they need to be when there's so many of them that everyone has one, to the point where, like, my cats have their own, that there's Charlie Coin and Fuzzy Coin and Peanut Coin, and every home has their own. And most of them fail. That's what it's going to take for there to be innovation, you know, because in any emerging technology, and I actually talked to some people who are very invested in Bitcoin, and they were like, no, the world has enough cryptocurrencies. And my thought was, that's like saying in 1996, you know, the internet has reached perfection and there's enough websites and we don't need any more development on anything. So what do you think of that, Ben Stone, the bad Quaker?
I think you're dead on. If you think about, say, if you just take a year in the early days of automobiles, and first off, compare Bitcoin to automobiles in the sense that you're destroying an old market by bringing in something that's going to be that's going to work much, much, much better. And so the people that are sold on the old market are not going to appreciate it very much. But some people will be able to see and you know, change their behavior accordingly. And in the early days of automobiles, there was literally companies popping up in everybody's garage. Well, this was the same way in the 70s with computers themselves. They were literally being manufactured in people's garages. And then eventually it started working down to where, you know, the riffraff got cut out, so to speak.
Yeah, in 1986, I remember reading an interview with the singer in the band Devo, who were kind of a shook things up kind of band that didn't sound like other bands and kind of blew some people's minds and were very main, you know, very popular, very like major label top 10 hits, but they were very strange and people reacted almost violently to them. Like, they actually did a version of Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones that was so deconstructed it didn't even have the melody or the riff of the original song. And they said they started doing that because when they were playing in Ohio, which is where Ben is from, in bars, when they first started out, people would throw beer bottles at their head and say, play some Stones. So they worked up a Devo-like version of it. But I remember reading an interview with the guy, Mark Mothersbaugh. You know, what they said, what would you be doing if you weren't in a rock band? And he said, I'd be working at McDonald's and sinking all my money into a recombinant DNA lab in my garage. And that just sounded crazy to me back then, because back then, like, you couldn't do that. But Kevin, can you have a recombinant DNA lab in your garage? And is it legal?
It is not legal. And I did not know that when I did have one. and it's no longer there. Yeah, purifying DNA out of plants or anything, your own cheek swabs, it technically should be a bio-level 1 hazard, and you should have some permits for that. So
legally, but not ethically. I mean, you're not talking about things where you weren't creating smart anthrax or something that only targets statists.
It's more like to educate my kids about DNA. Like, hey, yeah, look, if you take this cheek swab and dip it in alcohol, you can find DNA in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the modern equivalent of, like, you know, making a volcano out of you know, baking soda and in your garage, right?
Yeah, vinegar. Right.
Yeah,
indeed. So, and the fear, the main reason I broke it down was that, you know, when uninformed folks looked at it, they said, hey, are you making meth? And it's like, no, this is trying to teach my kids science. So I was like, all right, maybe the optics of this don't look good. Let's tear this apart. We'll bring him to a normal lab to teach him. But there is something a little profound about that if you want to study your own body, that there's things on paper that claim you can't.
Yep. And we'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends. We'll be taking your phone calls. The number, if you want to call in now, is 1-855-660-4261. That's 855-660-4261. On the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Inoculation from indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
We got the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Musical Variety Hour here. And the call-in number, we are taking calls, is 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. If you want to call Kevin McKernan and ask him if he's doing the devil's work by being involved in DNA sequencing. And we think he's not. We think he's doing good work that will save the lives of children. But if there's any devil involved, it's the government probably getting in the way. Now, Kevin, you own patents, but you don't like patents. And that's your personal belief, not your company's belief. Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm a scientist at Cordage. I do not govern the company. I'm not on the board. They follow, you know, the strict laws that they must to run a business in this in a medical field. But over the years, I used to be a big proponent of patents because I was like, yes, these are protecting the small guy. This is, means that we, you know, you get a little monopoly for a period of time so that you can invest for the right period of time to bring a technology to fruition. But what you come to learn after you've been through the whole cycle of defending patents in court and going to the USPTO to defend your patents is that they actually benefit the big guys more. And the whole act of getting a government monopoly in a particular area does not lend itself well to the free transmission of good ideas. And humanity is better served with the free transmission of good ideas. However, our business sectors do believe and have been convinced that these things are necessary in the statist architecture that they're forced to work within. And it's a currency in biotech. So I cannot work for a biotech company without signing an employment agreement that says they own my ideas. And I accept that. I'm a libertarian who believes in contract rights. And I still want to work in this field. So I knowingly accept that that's the currency of our field. And if I want to make a difference, I'm going to have to, drive in the roads.
So what is there's a lot of hubbub in the media lately about this DNA testing thing called 23andMe. What is that? And what's your opinion on it? It's not your company. You don't own stock.
No, we don't do that because precisely for these reasons is we sensed that the FDA was not really happy with where that was going. And so we stayed very compliant. But what 23andMe does is for $99, they can read about 500,000 letters in your genome, not your whole genome. Your genome's about 6 billion long. But they read the 500,000 most interesting ones that we know of today, and they send that directly to the consumer. And the concern the FDA has had is that, well, a consumer might take that information and make a decision to do a double mastectomy because of breast cancer risk. And it's a little bit ridiculous because I don't think – if you look at the marginal cost of every single piece of information in there, it gets down to be cheaper than a fortune cookie per disease that they talk about. And you would never listen to a fortune cookie, and nor would your doctor who's going to perform that work. So it's kind of absurd on its face that anyone would do something so severe without a second opinion. Where they get really upset is that there's some markers in the genome that imply how you're going to respond to certain drugs, like warfarin, and that you might get that information to decide to up or lower your dose. But again, I think that fails many logical tests, that people just don't act that way. They would, of course, get a second opinion before making something like that. So the FDA asked them to stop business, close them down, and the philosophical ramifications are that you can no longer read your own genome. You have to have an agency involved to read about your own life, and that's where I kind of depart with it. I don't think that should be the case, and what's really important for people to hear is they're not seeing the unseen consequences here, which is that through the course of 23andMe existing, they've informed several people of the risk of Parkinson's, one of which was Sergey Brin, who was the founder of Google, who has since poured hundreds of millions of dollars into Parkinson's research. Those types of events will no longer occur.
It's kind of like, if the government made it illegal to, like, let's say if your computer crashed and you took the dump file of, you know, all the letters and numbers that are produced when a computer crashes, people do this all the time. They upload those to websites, and people who are geeky enough to want to read that stuff and know how to do it will look at it and decode it and say, yeah, what happened was you had your USB plugged in and then unplugged it after the computer was turned off, and that's why it caused a crash. Don't do that. And that's a very simple explanation that people who are trained can take out of numbers like this. And there's people that actually like to do that, or there's people that would do it for, you know, $2 or $10 or something, who are experts on it but don't have an office somewhere and aren't a doctor. And of course there'd be snake oil people doing it too, but the market, I think, would take care of that, because there are people who have a high rating of doing that, like on Amazon, like, this merchant is good, click yes. And people could argue, well, this is your body, this is life and death. But, you know, people make decisions like that all the time, unregulated, and help people with things. You know, there's countless examples. What do you think about all that?
I think there's countless examples of information that you can get from another vendor that you can make a decision on that would be more life-threatening than a 23andMe test. They have 500,000 customers, and no one's ever been hurt. Now, since the FDA sent this letter, there's magically appeared a class action lawsuit against them, and that's my read on that is that's just ambulance chasing lawyers trying to make hay with the fact that the FDA sent them a letter. But it's very hard to see the information that they have and how someone would go about harming themselves. And then there's the fallacy that the FDA is actually going to protect you from this information in any way, shape, and form. And that's a whole other discussion that could go on for hours. But the track record of how they modulate this information, everyone will agree, needs a creative destruction. Even the FDA themselves understands that personalized medicine is a completely new realm for them. They're used to doing one-size-fits-all drugs like aspirin. You could not get aspirin through the FDA today. It's one of these things where they know it and everyone knows it, that we're going to have to look at the long tail of healthcare. We're going to have to look at every person as an individual. And the FDA architecture doesn't fit individual health. It fits $800 million drug trials.
Now, what about with this requirement that you have to have a doctor interpret the information? Does it have to be a U.S. doctor, or can you outsource that to India or Singapore where a doctor would be cheaper?
That's a really good question. We got to look at that. I don't know the answer to that, but I suspect it probably has to be a certified AMA doctor in the United States. But I could be wrong. That's a very interesting take. If there's one technology I saw the other day, because I called up my physician to ask about a little spot in my hand. I was afraid it might be like a melanoma. And I call up and they're, of course, like, well, we'll see you in February. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Can I just take a picture of it and send it to you? And lo and behold, there's a company that does that now. That they have telemedicine going on where you snap a picture of a spot in your hand and these guys within 20 minutes give you an answer.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what doctors do is visual, literally. Like, you know, you wait in line, you make an appointment, you go in months, you pay a bunch of money, and, you know, you wait hours and they have to weigh you and do all this other stuff to you. And then they just look at, you know, you lift up your shirt and they look at the spot and say, yes or no, we need more tests, you know. And that could be done with a smartphone, with people in India who are well-trained as physicians but don't need to be paid nearly as much for various reasons.
Yeah, so Eric Topol from the Scripps has a really great book on this called The Creative Destruction of Medicine. And it's all about how these technologies are going to change and how regulation is going to have to keep up with this, because these, like, technically your smartphone should then be classified as a medical device.
Oh.
And that would be a 510K approval and a PMA approval, and it would just roll into a really large, expensive trial, and that's not going to make health cheaper.
I've heard it said that that if the government simply allowed health insurance companies to compete across state lines, it would completely eliminate the need for a lot of what's being talked about right now, or even the purpose for it. What do you think?
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I'm not as well versed on the impact of the ACA. It does impact our business tremendously. tremendously, but it's so complicated. I only know the slice that pertains to us. And insurance is definitely the direction it's going. It's going to get more expensive because they're just the regulations that are in hand are not bringing free market principles to it. They're bringing socialized medicine during the largest wave of personalization that could ever occur from a technology standpoint.
Man, that just sounds to me like a dinosaur getting in the way of, you know, something small and brilliant, like a ninja that wants to run through and make things happen.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful, actually. I'm optimistic that that I think this personalization is going to happen. And what we may unfortunately see is that costs will go down and they'll say, hey, look what the ACA did. and so it may appear as a success, even though behind the curtain it was a large amount of friction that just wasted a lot of money.
Yeah. Ben, you got anything to add here?
Well, when you were talking about that, I was thinking about not very long ago, there was an animal physician in Texas that was doing, you know, basic stuff. Your dog sounds funny when he sneezes or whatever. And so you could log on and this veterinarian would basically do an examination of your pet over the internet. And they couldn't handle that either. I mean, it was like it's something that's so obvious that it would be so revolutionary in an industry. But the government couldn't tolerate that. That was outside of their scope.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, this sounds bizarre to people, but vets could probably handle some of the medicine that that physicians do for people now. Like with mammals, really basic medicine is pretty universal. You know, a broken arm, you know, a stomach problem. I mean, mammals have a lot in common to the point where, you know, a lot of times mob doctors, you know, someone that'll stitch up a bullet wound will be a vet because they're willing to do it or they owe money or something. And they, you know, they to the mob and they will be the mob doctor for the vet. I mean, the vet will be for the mob sometimes.
There are these great tools now that can snap onto your iPhone that are EKGs. And I know this because my brother has arrhythmias, and but he couldn't order it out of Walmart. He had to get it through a physician.
Yeah.
Couple hundred bucks as a result, but you know the parts in there are probably 20 bucks. And it's because it's protected through this regulation that the price has gone up. But this is fantastic because anytime he has an arrhythmia, he can just like hold his fingers on this thing and it can get a pulse and he can email it to a physician and say, hey, what do I do? So I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of people being able to move their healthcare into their own hands with the technology that's coming. If we can just convince everybody that a company seeking profit, that is actually a seek for a symbiotic relationship, not for some greed theft.
Yeah, and that's the thing that really baffles me about people who want to make everybody get government healthcare. It's basically like most of the people screeching for it think that, you know, insurance companies in the medical industry are these big, horrible behemoths, but they want to mandate that everybody deals with these big, horrible behemoths.
Right, right. I mean, I think the pre-existing condition thing has already backfired, right? I mean, that's basically saying you'll never be denied with a pre-existing condition.
Yeah, it's saying you can buy fire insurance when your house is on fire, basically.
Exactly.
We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Show.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Yeah. Freedom Fiends, end of hour two. And in lieu of our tweak and review, we're going to have Kevin give a bit of a summation here. We're going to let Kevin round things up and tie them up in a pretty little bow and send you home with things to think about. Kind of on the subject of why governments don't do what they say they do. You know, they basically say, we provide services, and without us, you'd all be dead and dying in ditches and pushing berries up your nose for dinner. And Kevin is going to tell us why that's not true. Why is that not true, Kevin?
Well, you can just measure the statistics in this, and you can see that that's not the case. They tend to pull us into wars and create all types of social structures that create poverty. And in reality, I think you've got to look at natural law. I spend a lot of my time looking at DNA and natural law. And one of the most common themes in natural law, in fact, the second law of thermodynamics, talks about entropy. And that is that the nature of the universe is to become less ordered over time. And this all stems back from the Big Bang. The universe is expanding into a vacuum, so molecules are spreading out and becoming less and less ordered over time. It's not uniform, and where there are differences in this entropy field, you get spontaneous order. You get things like fractals. You get things like DNA. But that trying to fight this tendency with centralized planning and centralized government is really fighting the second law of thermodynamics. And so you can't expect anything efficient to come out of it. I look at the way DNA moves through time and how it moves and selects for good ideas throughout time. And the vast majority of its efforts are done peacefully through love and through symbiosis. And it's very, very small percentages of it are done through parasitism. And when you look at the protection racket of government, it is a parasitic entity that sells and feeds on people's fear of what would happen without it. And there isn't a whole lot of evidence of what would happen without it, other than the vast majority of human history has existed without it.
See, so, what that sounds like to some people is, without the government, things would fall apart. Why is that not what you're saying?
Well, you have to separate causation from correlation. Has been correlated that the Industrial Revolution occurred when there's been government, but honestly, there was less of it then. But that does not mean that this innovation required government or that it was caused by it. It just happens to be a social structure that co-evolved at the same time, and we're soon going to evolve past the need for this. And a lot of that evolution is based on how connected we are as humans. The more we can communicate freely and share freely, the less we're going to fight and exhibit scarcity, because it's those interactions and those network effects that create log scale change such that wealth gets generated and people get pulled out of poverty. More people have been pulled out of poverty in the last 100 years than you've seen in the last 200 or 300 centuries, despite government. That's not because of government. Every government program you look at tends to slow that down, like the war on poverty. So you have to be very cautious when you see coercion getting involved to try and solve a problem, because someone's there making a buck.
Yeah, and they want to protect monopoly systems. You know, the classic example, who would build the roads without these monopoly government road builders? Well, non-monopoly government road builders. And, you know, what I always say is, without the governments, we'd all be flying around in rocket cars that someone would have designed in their garage, but there's too much regulation to try to design a rocket car in your garage.
Right, and it's not saying it's going to be unicorns in all beauty. No one knows what it would actually bring, but we can certainly look at the measured history of what government has brought, and we have to be able to do better than this.
Yeah. What do you think of people who want of the idea of small government, but people who are just shocked by the idea of, wait, you want smaller government than me. What's wrong with you?
There's cognitive dissonance there. Right? You want it so small, but every time there's a small government, it grows very big, and you have to then accept some coercion is okay. This is like some tumor cells are okay. It's not logically consistent, and the only reason people don't jump over that threshold is because I think they're convinced of foreigners will come and invade. And there really isn't a whole lot of history of that, despite the revisionist history of the wars that our country's gone to.
Well, thanks, Kevin. It's been really wonderful having you on here, Kevin McKernan, DNA scientist. And it's been great having Ben Stone in the wings with some commentary occasionally. He's been rained out, so he's not on right now. But people can tune in to the Freedom Fiends midweek show on Wednesdays or go to freedomfiends.com, or we'll be back next weekend.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's F-R-E-E-D-O-M-F-E-E-N-S.com.